We need to spend real time on the story that's gotten 601 points and 263 comments today, a personal post titled, "Did My Old Job Only Exist Because of Fraud?" The author, writing at david.newgas.net, describes working at a company and then later discovering evidence suggesting the company's core business metrics were fabricated. The post is careful and measured. The author is not naming names or making definitive legal claims. But the argument is that the revenue figures and user counts that justified the company's valuation and headcount were not what they appeared to be.
The HN comment thread is remarkable. You have people sharing their own experiences of working at companies where the numbers felt wrong, lawyers discussing what the legal exposure looks like for employees who didn't know, and several detailed analyses of how fraud-supported companies can sustain themselves longer than you'd expect, because investors and employees both have incentives not to ask hard questions.
The business pattern here is unfortunately familiar. A startup gets an inflated valuation based on projections or early metrics that are charitably presented optimistically. The inflated valuation brings in more funding. The funding enables real hiring, real operations, sometimes even real revenue, which creates a layer of legitimate business activity on top of the original fraud. Employees who join years after the founding are genuinely creating value, genuinely doing real work, but the structural foundation they're building on was compromised from the start.
And this connects to the New York rent collection story, which is a very different kind of economic anomaly, but similarly involves numbers that don't fit expected patterns. Politico is reporting that rent collections in New York are down in ways that don't match historical patterns or the official economic indicators. The HN thread has 369 comments, which is extraordinary for a policy story. And the theories range from a delayed fallout from the 2025 eviction moratorium extensions to the effects of high interest rates on the shadow landlord economy, to the possibility that some of the data itself has collection problems.
The rent story intersects with the fraud discussion in an interesting way. One of the theories in the HN thread is that some portion of New York's rental market has been operating with creative accounting, overstated collections, understated vacancies that are now showing up as gaps because the broader economic pressure has made the gap impossible to paper over. That's speculative, and the thread is appropriately cautious about it, but it's the kind of structural concern that the fraud post illustrates in a more personal way.
The minimum viable unit of saleable software post at brander.org rounds out the business stories with a more constructive framing. The author argues that the traditional SaaS model, recurring subscription, continuous feature development, ever-expanding product surface, is not the only viable path for software businesses. They make the case for software products that are genuinely complete, narrow in scope, sold once or with minimal ongoing commitment, and priced accordingly. The concept is appealing partly because it's a counter-argument to the growth-at-all-costs narrative that the fraud post illustrates the dark side of.
There's a real tension there between what investors want, recurring revenue, expansion metrics, net revenue retention, and what a lot of software developers would actually prefer to build. The post has generated 64 comments, and the discussion is largely sympathetic, with people sharing examples of small, complete software products that have sustained themselves without the venture capital escalator.
All right, Marcus, I want to do our what if we're wrong exercise with the open models story, because I think we've been treating the proprietary model mode is collapsing argument as fairly settled, and I want to stress test that.
Go for it. Make the case that we might be wrong.
The confident claim we've been making, and that the marble.onl post is making, is that for most use cases, the capability gap between frontier proprietary models and well-tuned open models has essentially closed. Here's what would need to be true for that to be wrong. First, the benchmarks being used to demonstrate GLM 5.2 competitive with Opus might not reflect the actual distribution of real production tasks. HN commenters in that thread are specifically pointing out that benchmark suites tend to get saturated, models optimize for them, and the scores stop reflecting genuine capability. If the capability gap is still 20 to 30% on actual enterprise workflows, the open model case weakens significantly.
And there's a second assumption embedded in the switch to open models argument, that the operational cost of running a capable local model is negligible. That's true for a solo developer running inference on a modern GPU laptop. It is much less true for an organization running thousands of concurrent queries. The infrastructure management cost, the model update cadence, the safety evaluation requirements, those are real costs that don't appear in the per-token comparison.
Exactly. The fine-tuning result we discussed, great performance from Qwen 3 at 0.6 billion parameters on a narrow categorization task, is genuine. But it also required someone who knew how to prepare training data, run the fine-tuning loop, evaluate the outputs, and iterate. That expertise isn't free. For organizations without that capability in-house, paying Anthropic's API pricing might still be the economically rational choice, even if the open model would theoretically perform comparably.
So if we're wrong, here's what to watch for. Look at enterprise contract renewals with Anthropic and OpenAI over the next 2 quarters. If large organizations are actually switching in meaningful numbers to open model infrastructure, we'd expect to see it reflected in ARR growth slowdowns at the proprietary labs. If Anthropic's revenue keeps growing strongly, even as the open model narrative intensifies, that's a signal that the switching cost story is more important than the capability gap story.
And watch the fine-tuning services market. If companies like Replicate, Modal, or Lambda are growing their fine-tuning and inference hosting revenue significantly, that would confirm that organizations want open models but are outsourcing the operational complexity, which is a very different world than switch to local models and save money.
The UK bond market story also deserves a mention here. The Financial Conduct Authority is announcing that investors will get real-time visibility into UK bond market activity for the first time. This might seem like a technical market structure story, but the implication is significant. Bond markets have historically operated with far less transparency than equity markets. Large institutional trades could happen without other market participants knowing the price or volume. Real-time reporting changes the information asymmetry, which should tighten spreads and reduce the advantage that well-connected market makers have held. It scored only 31 points on HN, but for anyone in fixed income, this is the kind of regulatory change that restructures entire trading strategies.